Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Tom Gimbel, he is the president and founder, the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing fantastic, John. How are you?
I'm doing good, and let's just talk about the job growth and the numbers that we saw in March. How do I read that? What's the good or the bad of those?
My view is always if we add job, it's a heck of a lot better than if we don't. So we added over almost 250,000 jobs, 236,000 jobs to the country. That is a very good sign.
It's not a number that stands alone, then. It's how much are they earning? What are they paying for interest rates on loans and credit cards and stuff like that? Give it a little more context. What is the, how does it impact the potential for a recession?
Yeah, I think it actually shows that the economy is still in a good place and we're not near a recession. So what the Fed's trying to do is say, we've got to raise interest rates because you can't borrow money for free, or you have situations like what's happened with Silicon Valley Bank or Signature Bank, or the layoffs we had in the tech sector, and then you have inflation. And so there's a way that business has worked in this country for hundreds of years, and you charge an interest rate, and businesses have to survive in doing that. And so now what they've got to do is find where the right point is. And we've got to hit that, and then we'll see some problems with the stock market, and we'll see a little bit of labor problems with unemployment, and then the lower rates to get to the right point in time. And whether that number is 4.5% or 5%, you know, time will tell.
Yeah.
But right now we're in a new normal, John. And what I've been saying is that for 20 years, 25 years, we've been creating a new industry of technology, of the internet, the .com, e-commerce. And now we've also, over the past 30 years, had real venture capital, and it's become accessible to so many more people. We simply have more companies, more startups, and more jobs than ever before, and that's not going to change. And so the jobs numbers are going to be good for a while.
That's interesting that you put it that way, because mostly the jobs numbers, which unemployment is remarkably historically low, has been of late seen as a bad sign. It's proof that we haven't tackled inflation. There's too many jobs available out there. It'll drive wages up. You don't see it that way.
Well, I think wages have gotten driven up due to an influx of different points meeting, right? And so what that was big technology and tons of money, number one. It was built up backlog of orders from COVID and the supply chain problems, number two, and the creation of the gig economy and people deciding they didn't want to be in corporate America and would rather do two or three independent contractor 1099 jobs like walking dogs or being a delivery person or something like that. So we had this influx of events that created it. And now we're in this situation where COVID, knock on wood, is behind us. Mm-hmm. The supply chain problem is behind us. And we're starting to see salaries level off. We saw the technology layoffs come into play. There was an article in the Journal last week of a recruiter at Meta or Facebook who was making $190,000 to not do anything, right?
Yeah, I saw that.
Those days are over. So we've got a little bit more normalcy coming back into the world. That's a good thing.
$190,000, and she just sort of did a first-person narrative looking at her phone telling the story, and that was a very weird video that she posted. She seemed angry at them for giving her $190,000 a year. I guess it wasn't rewarding work. It was also bizarre, right? Like, you lose faith in some of these companies that are so big when they know that's happening, and they don't seem to care or have any way to fix it.
100% is some things just it came easily, and when you're making that much money, you can take wild floaters and hire people based on what may happen and not have them be working, and it really upsets the market where smaller and medium-sized companies can't afford the talent. And the worst part is that the people believe they're worth that amount in this crazy environment, and they think they should get it. And when things settle down, you've got emotional problems, and they've bought things financially they couldn't afford.
Give me 30 seconds on what you think of the DNC coming to Chicago and the jobs that will bring.
I think it's a good thing for the short term. I don't think it does much for the long term, but I think in the short term, I believe that it'll help that when there's this different views on safety in the city, that it'll probably help everybody be on the same page that we've got to get the city really safe.
Yeah.
It'll clean up the city,
yeah.
And they'll have to reinvest, but it's also going to increase government jobs, and I'm not really a fan of that.
It is an interesting point you make about how it will put the emphasis on the city to clean up its act. And you're talking about crime there. It's sort of like when you have everybody coming over for Easter or the holidays and you go, okay, we got to clean up the house and get everything in order. We're going to be entertaining people, not just 50,000 people, but people from around the world. So Chicago, 2024, get your act together. If not now, certainly by then, right?
I think you're 100% correct. It'll be really interesting to see what the city does with the homeless problem with all these tents under the viaducts and the bridges, and how they tackle that over the course of the next 18 months before the convention.
Tom Gimbel's the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Thank you, Tom.
Stay healthy. Be safe, John.
Philip Weiss makes a difference. He joins us frequently on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's the president of SciFarth at Work. Philip, what does pay transparency mean? What is that trend?
It's a term, John, that more and more bosses will become familiar with in the next year to 2 years. It's really a movement. It started by some companies, and now it's been picked up by state governments, that requires companies, employers, to post the range of salaries for any job for which they're hiring or, in some cases, promoting people into. And what that means, bottom line, is you work at a company, you got a certain job, you want to know what others might be paid for that same kind of work, just look at a job posting and you will see the bottom and the top and obviously know where you fall on that continuum. So it's raising eyebrows and it's created some really interesting byproducts as well.
And I'm sorry, this is something they should do or the government is going to mandate that they do?
Well, the trend is state governments are mandating it. So for example, this year alone, we've got three states, Washington, California, and coming up New York, that are making it a requirement to post the range for jobs for which you're hiring or potentially promoting people. Illinois is considering a similar law. It's been moving rather quickly through the legislature. So it is definitely a trend, likely will affect Illinois as well. And what's fascinating about it is employees are not stupid. So they're quick to take a look and draw conclusions about where they fall on the pecking order of pay.
So this how specific would it be about the pay that my colleagues are earning?
Well, that is a really critical question, John, because the way the laws currently are written, and we expect this not to change, is you don't have to reveal who gets paid what specifically. So if you're hiring for an engineer job, let's engineer level two, let's call it that, you have to actually include in your job posting the lowest you pay somebody in that job and the highest you pay somebody without names or other identifying information. But that is more than enough information to lead employees to realize, hey, I've been here a number of years, why aren't I making more? Or in some cases, quite the opposite. And what's really fascinating about this, John, is that some companies have taken the bull by the horns and gone too far. They've actually done what you sort of were implying, and they've revealed even more information. Who gets paid what specifically? That's had dramatic negative effects because people have trouble looking at each other in the face for the next week or two when they know who exactly is getting more take home than they are. So you want to actually follow the law on this one, but by no means go beyond it because it creates a lot of tension in the ranks.
We're talking about pay transparency with Philip Weiss from SciFarth at Work. Well, you started to answer my next question, I guess. I'm wondering what this does to morale. Does it motivate people?
Yeah, well, that is the other. I mean, you're answering all the questions that we were concerned about on the legal side, John. Interestingly, Bosses were worried because they've always kept compensation as one of those confidential, you know, kind of black box hidden pieces of info. But in fact, properly implemented and properly explained, pay transparency actually motivates people to work harder and requires that managers be clear on why someone is being paid what they're paid, meaning we're more frank in our performance discussions if we have to justify a salary. So it's created, in fact, when properly implemented, a sense of greater fairness, oddly, mm-hmm. in some people's minds, and definitely encourages people to work harder. There's a quick anecdote on that. We have a New York-based food service company where we're working with them now, and they posted the manager salary ranges along with the employee salary ranges. The employees saw what their managers were making, and it was higher than the employees expected. The result was they started working harder, being more careful, making deliveries on time because they're like, I want to get that promotion faster because I want to get that payday. So revealing salaries can have a very positive effect if you're clear on what people are paid and why, and you do it in a fair manner.
I've never been in this position, but it would seem to me, though, that some of the considerations would be so subjective they would be hard to quantify or even put in a job listing. Some employees seem to work better with others, and you might not be able to justify it on a spreadsheet, but you could also value that. I just wonder if, having said that, it might be difficult sometimes for managers to either justify a raise or explain it to other employees.
Yeah, that's sort of the kind of the odd silver lining as well. And what I mean by that, John, is managers at companies that now have to follow these new pay transparency laws are asking their bosses, the CEOs, the human resources people, I want to be able to better explain what someone's being paid to that employee. And it might be, look, we got people we just hired in who already had a lot more experience than you, but we want you to get there. Or your customer service skills are good, but this is what great looks like, and we'll move you to that next level. You might get to the top of the range if you do all that we're asking for. We expect you will. So in a way, it gives managers a push to be clearer on why someone is not being paid as much as they would expect, and it gives employees an incentive. You do want to be careful, John, not to say, hey, John Williams makes double what you make because he's just a much better worker. Don't make it about the individuals. Make it about the performance and the higher raise better performance can produce. So more specifics are a good thing in that context.
Tell us the story about the Southwest Paint Company that either did it right or did it wrong. Do you know the one I'm thinking about?
This is a did it wrong, no question about that. This is a company that's now come to us for some help. They did not do what you just alluded to. They did not think through how they would explain salaries to their employees and probably never had to before in any detail. And what they really missed the ball on, John, was double-checking, have we been fair in who we're paying and what we're paying them? Have we given them the right raises, particularly longer-term employees who never complained much as did their jobs?
Yeah.
One guy saw the posting, saw he was at the bottom end, long-term employee, John. He was so upset that he took one of the company's own paint products and spray-painted the words cheap chump on the car of his boss in the parking lot. It created all kinds of other issues for the guy's career, but it could have been alleviated by simply sitting this guy down, explaining the salary, but more importantly, double-checking, are we paying people equitably based on whether it's tenure, performance, or customer service?
Philip Weiss, always with some amazing, interesting, relevant stories. Sifarth at Work. Nice to talk to you, Philip. Let's talk again soon.
Look forward to it, John. Thank you.
Paige Guzman, who is the CMO at Lagunitas Brewing Company, which just sounds like a lot of fun to say or work or open up a tap room. Paige, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I am doing great, John. Thanks so much. It is a pleasure. I get to go and work with beer and dogs most days, so who can complain?
Did you say beer and dogs most days?
Mm-hmm.
Is that because dogs are allowed in the tap room? What do dogs have to do with beer?
Well, our dogs are really our spirit animal here at Lagunitas. They're on all of our packaging. And out here in California, they are allowed in our tap room because our tap room is outdoors. In Chicago, you will see images of dogs everywhere, but because it's in the middle of the brewing facility, dogs are not allowed there.
So tell me a little bit about the tap room and the beer sanctuary, which is going to reopen. How long was it closed? And I see the opening date. It's going to be April 13th.
Yeah, just 2 days away. So the brewery and tap room are located in the Pilsen Douglas Park neighborhood, 2607 West 17th. And we've been there since 2014. Our founder, Tony McGee, is from Chicago, as am I. Grew up in the Palatine neighborhood. And he wanted to bring fresh beer to Chicago and realized with some back-of-the-envelope math that for what he was paying in trucking to bring his beer from Northern California east of the Mississippi, he could build a brewery. And so we did. We opened the doors in 2014, and we now produce more than half of our beer at that brewery. But unfortunately, with COVID coming in 2020, we shut the doors to the tap room and the tours because, as I said, it's located in the middle of the brewery. You literally have to walk through areas that our brewers and our production teams walk through. So we needed to keep the brewing facility and our employees safe. So we shut it down about 3 years ago, and we are thrilled to bring it back on Wednesday.
What is it going to be like? As like it was? Have you all made changes?
We, you know what? We don't mess with a great thing. So our Chicago guests have known and love us for the wackiness that Lagunitas is. And if there's anything that's changed, I would say our food has gotten better and our servers have gotten friendlier, but you can still walk into the Willy Wonka-esque experience with the blue lights and black lights shining all around. You can hang out in the basement and have a beer and play some giant Jenga. And when you're hungry, you can head upstairs, either via the elevator or the stairs, and join us for dinner, drinks, music. And then you can also walk out onto our catwalk. So you can physically look down at all of the brewing mechanisms that are happening 24/7 there.
Are you all distributed nationally? Is it just a Chicago or California beer?
Yeah, we are the largest IPA in the world. We are very proud of that fact, and we are distributed all across the United States and very proud of our Chicago roots.
Was it ever a micro or a craft beer, or was it the ambition to always be this big?
I think if you asked our founder what his ambition to be this big, he would laugh. His ambition was to make great beer, and thankfully, he made a bet on a product called IPA, which I don't know if you remember back in 1993, but I certainly wasn't drinking IPA. Yeah. I was drinking much lighter beers, and by putting IPA front and center on our label, he really created a sensation and became the world's number one IPA, and now we continue to innovate and iterate off of his legacy. Very proud of the fact that this brand started certainly as a craft brewery, and we have stayed true to our roots, that all of our products are crafted with the best ingredients and the quirkiest, smartest brewers in the world.
I get your point about IPA not being on people's radars in the mid-90s. And then we sort of got an education pretty quick and thought, ooh, that's good. We like that. And now it's such a staple. I wonder if some brewers kind of roll their eyes at, oh, another IPA. But that really has been the rage for several years now, isn't it?
It has been. And I think with anything, as it gains, you know, mass popularity, certainly the early adopters might roll their eyes. It's like saying you saw the Smashing Pumpkins at the Metro in 1989, right? Like, it is cool to have tried something before everybody else did. Yeah. But once it becomes at scale, for me, I know I can go to any, you know, great restaurant or airport at O'Hare and get a great IPA, but if I want to try the newest, most cutting-edge products that our brewers are creating, come down to our tap room, because that's where we have anywhere between 10 and 12 dedicated lines to our limited releases, and those are products that are seasonal, and they're really on the cutting edge of brewing technology and the creativity of our brewers, because trust me, those men and women are able to create products out of, you know, four ingredients in beer that are unbelievable. So any palate, I would say, should come down. And also for folks that don't drink, you know, there's a lot of consumers out there that like to pause during the week or like to pause for dry January or sober September. And we have an IPNA, a non-alcoholic for them, or our fastest growing hopped sparkling water. Stick with me here. It's called Hoppy Refresher. And it is our fastest growing SKU in all of our portfolio because you can use it as a sparkling water, as a mixer, goes great with gin, or as a night extender. You know, you might have two beers and then want to slow it down a little bit. So there's all kinds of products for all kinds of people in our tap rooms and then, of course, at major retailers as well.
Paige Guzman is the CMO at Lagunitas. How do you anticipate where the market will go taste-wise? I see a lot of not fruit flavors, but sort of sweeter flavored beers, like a craft blueberry inspired beer, which is not my cup of tea, but it seems like there's more of that these days.
Yeah, there's certainly, you know, if you think about the generation, my generation that's in our late 40s, early 50s, a lot of us grew up drinking soda and the generations before it didn't. So we have a palate that's more attuned to like sweeter flavors. I would say for Lagunitas, we haven't gone that direction. We don't dump sugar into our products or try to create overly sweet products. It's one of the reasons why we didn't enter the seltzer game. It didn't feel true to who we are as a brand and as a company. So there's plenty of sweet products out there for consumers to find, but for Lagunitas, we focus on a different taste profile.
That's fascinating. They're back. The Lagunitas Tap Room and Beer Sanctuary reopens Thursday. Good food and wackiness. I think that was the word you used. Dogs and beer. So good to have you back, Paige. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, John. We look forward to seeing you guys there. Have a great one.
You betcha. The Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Allstate's CEO got a big bonus despite it being one of the worst years in memory for the Northbrook-based insurance company. Cranes reports Tom Wilson collected more than $15 million in total compensation in 2022. His bonus was $2.4 million, and he earned more than $11 million in stock and options. The overall compensation was about 21% less than 2021. For the year, Allstate posted a net loss of $1.4 billion, and ever since Wilson took over as CEO, Allstate has steadily lost auto market share. Book value per share, which measures an insurance company's value, dropped 29%. You'll soon be able to buy Greek-inspired meals to go and wines from Avli Restaurant Group at Dom's Kitchen and Market. The two companies have announced a new partnership beginning immediately. Avli will fill a gap in Dom's Mediterranean offerings as the company expands its inventory and physical footprint. Dom's opened its first location in 2021 and plans to open 15 more locations by 2025. Dom's team of founders includes Bob Mariano from the Mariano's grocery chain and Jay Owen, the great-grandson of the Dominic's founder. Avli on the Park was just added to the Michelin Guide. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, we're going to dish a little dirt today after I tell you we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. We often use the expression, if these walls could talk, but how about if this dirt could talk? There are some researchers at the University of Illinois who would love to listen in on those conversations. Andrew Margonaut is an assistant professor of soil sciences and has turned a childhood love of playing in the dirt into a profession.
We have at the U of I on campus what we think is the world's largest and oldest soil archive collection.
How many jars of dirt are there?
Over 8,000.
It is a mother load of dirt samples from all over the state.
We have soils going back, in some cases, as far back as 1862, like a time capsule, to where agriculture in Illinois was at its very inception. That's a historical novelty, to be sure, but more practically, for the first time, I think, ever in the world, we can begin to answer some of these questions.
Questions about whether soil quality is better or worse after all we've done to it over the years. Meanwhile, there's a team of technicians doing the dirty work of cataloging the samples, and then?
We plan to make it publicly available, and that would look like a website where you can walk in, and based upon an interactive map, you can identify if a soil was taken, say, in your county, in your region, what was known about it at the time of sampling, and by resampling these locations, how soils have changed.
Ah, resampling. Well, that is where you come in, Mr. or Ms. Illinois landowner.
We have a Google Map link where we've marked every single location that was sampled over the past 120 years. If folks go to that Google Map link, they can see if their farm or if somewhere in their county, was there a soil sample taken and when. And if they're willing, we'd love to be able to resample that location, because that's where we really derive insights that can help improve farming in the state.
Andrew Margonot at the University of Illinois. From the farm to your belly, today's National Cheese Fondue Day. You can thank the Swiss for that. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
There's a new business in town. It's called UFO Drive, where you rent flying spaceships. Aiden McLean is the CEO. Is that what it is? These are rocket cars, Aiden, that hover above the Earth? Is that what they are?
Yeah, not quite yet, but we're planning for that in the future for sure. It's just plain old road cars for now, I'm afraid, but electric, 100% electric.
Yeah, let's talk about that. UFO Drive is an electric car rental business on Michigan Avenue in Chicago. So talk more about it. What do you guys do and how do you do it?
Yeah, so UFO Drive, as we call it in Europe, or UFO Drive for English mother tongue, it's a 24/7 digital car rental company. And what that means is there's no human interaction. You use your smartphone to simply book a car and arrive and drive within 2 minutes, and only electric cars in prime city and airport locations. We launched in the U.S. back in August last year, our first location in San Francisco, and back in late December in Millennium Park on off Michigan Avenue in Chicago, and now we're in 10 cities across the U.S.
How do I get the car? Can you describe that?
Yeah, so you download our app. So it's UFO Drive. Download our app from the App Store. You register, and which takes about 2 minutes. The phone will direct you to the car. When you get to the car, you simply use the security features in the phone to open the car, and then you drive away. It's as simple as that. So there's no queuing, you know, no lines, no paperwork, none of the normal hassle you get with car rental that everybody kind of dislikes. None of that. Instead, it's a very seamless, easy experience, and it's only electric cars. And then the magic kind of starts after you leave the parking lot, because we give real-time charging support to our customers. We make sure they can never have range anxiety or run out of power. We can direct them to charges where they need to, and then all the charging is paid for by ourselves, so it's kind of all-you-can-eat electricity.
You also pay for tolls, additional drivers, whatever. It's all included once you're in the car. There's no extra cost, right?
Yeah, correct. So when we were building the company 5 years ago in Europe, we wanted to take away all of the pain points that people don't like about car rental, and one of those pain points is lack of price transparency and all the extras you get hit with. So we try to include everything in one price per day and make it very simple for the customer.
And so am I going to a pre-designated lot, or like we see with scooters and bicycles, it is wherever it was last left by the previous user?
No, that's more the car sharing or scooter sharing model. This is a pickup location, a dedicated branded pickup location with our own electric chargers installed. And that's under the Bean on Michigan Avenue in the case of Chicago. But we also have a delivery service, which we launched in Chicago, our first American delivery service, which has proved very popular in Europe. So how that works is you still use the app, you still download the app and register and book your car. You pick the location you want the car and the time you want the car, and it'll be there for you when you want.
What was that you said about the Bean on Michigan Avenue in Chicago?
Yeah, that's where our location is in Chicago. It's our first Chicago location, so in the under Millennium Park, in the car park, in the parking lot, that's where we're based.
I'm trying to think of where that is, because I go by Millennium Park all the time. So there is a parking lot underneath there, right?
Yeah. You access it. I was there myself in December. You access it from Michigan Avenue.
So when I go down there, that's where the cars are. And when I do that, do I just like walk up to my vehicle and take it? Do I check in with somebody?
Nope, no checking in. There's no people. So it's just you and your smartphone in the car. So the smartphone app will direct you to everything you need to do. It's very simple and intuitive. And you simply just do a three-step process to verify you are you, and then the car will open, and that's it.
I know you've said all of these things several times. I'm not as dense as I think I sound right now, but I guess it just speaks to the novelty of all of this, because that's not my experience when I go to O'Hare or a major airport. Will you have a location at the airports, too? Where will you be located in the Chicago area?
Yeah, so we're going to expand. We're not in O'Hare yet, but we are going to expand to multiple locations across the Chicago area, starting with Inside the Loop. And really, just like you said, my own personal experience of car rental was like yours. It was, you know, the lines and the paperwork and the hassle and not getting the car you want and all the extra charges. And that's why we created UFO Drive, because we wanted to make it a seamless experience for customers.
So then what do you imagine the typical customer is then? Is it somebody in town for the weekend that just wants to drive around the city? Maybe I've come in from the suburbs. I don't know. Who will be renting this vehicle in Chicago?
It's a whole range of the above. So we've got business travel, and people want vehicles for, you know, midweek trips for business to get maybe out of the city. We want people, we get people who are tourists who on weekend, and we also have what we call city dwellers. So people who maybe live downtown and want to use an occasional, they might own a car, so they might use car sharing or Ubers for short trips, but they want to use UFO Drive for longer trips for multi-day rental. And that's typically one of our customer classes.
How do you price it out then?
So it gets cheaper the more you rent. The longer you rent, the cheaper it gets. So, and also when you rent, so weekends will be more expensive than weekdays. So on a typical 3 to 4 day rental, it can be less than $60 a day. And that includes all of your electricity and charging, etc. So the equivalent of free fuel.
I have so many questions that they ask when you're renting the car, like, do you want an upgrade, or do you have multiple drivers, or do you want insurance? And they kind of look at you like you're a fool if you don't get the insurance. It has been fantastically expensive since the pandemic started to rent a vehicle. $60 a day sounds okay to me.
Yeah, that's a supply and demand issue, which is beginning to ease. So during the pandemic, a lot of rental companies defleeted. They got rid of cars because of no demand. And then they struggled to refleet when demand increased. So prices were very high. We kept our prices pretty stable. We've had good demand even during the pandemic, actually, because people liked the no human part. Unfortunately, they liked dealing with
the contactless. Well, what are we driving, Aiden? If it's an all-electric vehicle, what vehicle is that?
Well, we only have Tesla in Chicago right now, but we have a whole range of other models in other cities. So we have Volkswagen ID.3s, ID.4s. We have the Tesla Model 3, Tesla Model Y in Chicago. We've also added recently more of a European model, Cooper Born, but we've also looking to add Ford, Mustang, Mach-E, etc. They all come onto the fleet in the next couple of months. We've also got Hyundai, some electric Hyundais, and also the new Polestar, which is proving quite popular.
UFODrive.com, UFODrive.com. So you're up and running. Those vehicles are there right now, huh?
Right now, ready to go.
Aiden McLean is the UFO Drive CEO. Aiden, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for the heads up on all of this.
Great. Thank you so much.